agent of theirs was indeed responsible for the calamity, then there was no way they'd ever allow it to be traced back to them. Elves took their spying and skulking in the shadows very seriously. Then there was the matter of these supposed perpetrators' choice of target. Considering the destructive power of the calamity, hitting a place like Monotol made very little sense. That city had very little strategic or economic value in the grand scheme of things. If they truly had the capability and the intention of wounding the Empire in such a way, then the Republic would have gone after a more valuable region. It made a lot more sense to blow up the royal capital and gouge out the heart of the Empire. It was what Edward would have done in their position. In fact, that was more or less what he was planning to do to the Republic at this very moment.
Sir, requesting permission to keep suspect as a pet.
His subordinate's bizarre question made Edward's scheming grind to a halt. The black-haired woman was gently stroking the unconscious mimic's imitation wood surface with a tiny smile on her face.
Really, Zone? This again?
Affirmative.
Ha. All right, I'll bite. Why?
I have determined it is quite cute.
So it was that, after all. This problem child always had a twisted sense of aesthetics. It wasn't the first time she'd made the ludicrous request to keep a murderous monster around as a pet. Normally he might consider it if Zone was a monster tamer like her colleague with the codename Bandit, but she wasn't.
Also, there is a high chance that it likes me,
she added.
I highly doubt that. It just tried to take you hostage. That's not something you normally do to people you like.
It did? When?
You know, when it wrapped those tentacles around you.
He wiggled his fingers for emphasis, causing his subordinate to blink her yellow eyes in confusion.
That wasn't a hug? But it was so squishy and warm.
Edward sighed. Did she really not notice? While it was true that the monster had no chance of overpowering her outrageous strength attribute, that didn't mean it was being nice. Honestly, how come she was this ignorant even though she was also a ranker like him? It boggled the mind how dense this woman could be sometimes.
No, Zone. It wasn't showing affection. It tried to hurt you.
I don't mind. I promise I'll discipline it, therefore—
Forget it. We'll be disposing of that thing once Hook is done rooting around in its mind for the Calamity Method.
The man with the codename Hook was another subordinate of Edward's. His primary job was a psionic, a rare occupation from the southern continent that utilized mind-based skills and spells in combat. Their domination magic was powerful and versatile, easily dwarfing a warlock's potential for mind-fuckery. The task of sifting through the monster's memories to get details surrounding the calamity was child's play for a psionic of Hook's caliber. Granted, such forceful methods usually left the subject a drooling vegetable, but Edward was going to execute the thing once he was done with it anyway. His female colleague should have known all this, yet she kept staring expectantly at him.
Don't give me that pleading look, Zone. You know we can't risk the truth of the calamity leaking out.
The elves destroyed a human city and murdered thousands of humans. This was the official story he'd fed to the immature and hot-blooded emperor. It wouldn't be long before that lie was propagated throughout the empire and spoon-fed to its citizens. With the entire country's disdain and distrust towards the elves rising, it would be the perfect opportunity to finally engage in open warfare and wipe those twigs off the face of this world. Once that was over, the Empire would be in a position to gobble up or vassalize the remaining nations, securing its dominion over the continent. Some small part of Edward actually wanted to thank that moronic mimic. Not only did it inadvertently give his country a plausible reason to get the populace to support this war, but it was also going to provide them with a weapon of mass destruction. If the calamity could be replicated and weaponized, then even world domination would be within the Empire's grasp. Or at least, that was the way he would manipulate that juvenile of an emperor into seeing things. As far as Edward was concerned, All these wars on the horizon were nothing more than a way for him to further his jobs and skills. He was so close to achieving a second rank up that he could almost taste it, but a man of his position found it difficult to raise the spy job and its related skills during such peaceful times. He was so close to a breakthrough, and then he just had to diligently work at becoming a level 100 spy, at which point he would achieve his second rank up. Of course, one could argue he should have picked an easier job to level up, but being a spy gave him benefits beyond skills and attributes. To begin with, the job was a closely guarded secret of the very elves he would use it against. He had no time for such things. Being able to steal it away from them decades ago was what allowed him to become spymaster in the first place. It was a position of power with many benefits, such as first-rate equipment and information, not to mention the freedom to act as he saw fit. There was also the benefit that, strictly speaking, spy was not a combat-oriented job. It still gained some XP from murdering the ever-living piss out of stuff, but it was the act of infiltration and subterfuge that made it go up in level to any significant extent. The need and opportunity for such acts would increase tremendously during open warfare, as well as during the months leading up to the official start of the campaign. Hopefully enough to allow the spymaster to obtain his second level 100 job. This was Edward's primary concern, as he was running short on time. Even if his lifespan may have been extended after he ranked up into an ascendant, he was already over a century old. His body and mind were both in good enough condition to allow him to remain on active duty, but his time until forced retirement and subsequent death was rapidly running out. However, once he achieved his goals and maxed out his second job, he would be allowed to rank up once more. At that point, he would not only gain another ultimate skill, but would also evolve into an immortal being that no longer had to fear the passage of time. After that, he would have literally all the time in the world to work on achieving the mythical third and final rank up an enlightened could attain. Until then, however, he had to be prudent, patient, and careful.
"Now go fetch those guardsmen and tell them to drag our friend back to its cell," he ordered. "Prepare both it and the gnome for transport back to the capital. I want them out of here by tomorrow."
Part 4.
"Teach!"
demanded Boxy.
"No!"
replied Fizzy in a shrill voice.
"Don't wanna! Go away!"
"I want to, but... cage!"
The mimic swayed front to back while suspended inside its special cage as if to make a point. Not too hard, though. The highly untasty, zappy stuff was back, and it didn't want any part of that. Boxy had been in a rage ever since it woke up half an hour ago and found itself back in the cell minus two jobs. It was still coming to terms with its more... limited brain capacity. After all, it had lost about a third of its intelligence and a good chunk of wisdom. Its mental processes had regressed back to what they were 3 weeks ago, just after the calamity that started this whole mess. And it did not like that. Not one bit.
"Teach!"
yelled Zira's misplaced head again. It wanted to reclaim what it once had. The warlock job? It had no idea where it would get that. The first time was a total lucky fluke. It was highly unlikely for that to happen again. At least Artificer could be recovered easily enough as long as that insufferable gnome granted it the job again.
"Please, just leave me alone!"
She was, understandably, not especially willing to do so. Fizzy hadn't had the chance to come to terms with the horrible reality of her unjust imprisonment before those guards came back and left this terrifying box in the same cell with her. She begged them to put her in a different place, but the humans just stared at each other awkwardly before locking them in together and walking away. A man bearing His Majesty's royal seal had given them an order, and they carried it out. Nothing more, nothing less. Even though all of them sympathized with her, none of them were willing to risk incurring the wrath of someone who wielded the Emperor's authority. roared the mimic.
"Shut up!"
snapped Fizzy.
"Shut up, shut up, shut up!"
"No! Teach me art, Fisher!
Idiots! Ow!
Now, why had Fizzy gone and kicked the cage? She knew full well it was electrified. Maybe the real idiot was her, after all.
Okay, look!
The gnome decided it would probably be better to just explain, so she lifted her bound arms for emphasis.
You see these things? These are mana-sealing shackles, you dimwit! Not only do they drain your MP, but they also disable its recovery. And I can't activate my mentor skill without MP. Therefore, I can't give you the job even if I wanted to. Which, big surprise, I don't.
You lie! Betrayer! Liar! Untasty, nasty thing!
You have the same stuff bolted onto you, moron! You don't have your MP either, right?
No.
So if you understand, then please just shut the fuck up!
And it did indeed go silent. The gnome stared at it, her small shoulders going up and down as she steadied her agitated breathing. She really should have just said that stuff at the start. Boxy was always good at listening to her, so it wouldn't ask again once it had no choice but to accept her words. Alas, once the gnome finally calmed herself down, she was instead gripped by anxiety and uncertainty. She had just yelled at and insulted a monster that could gobble her up in one mouthful. That realization was more than enough to cause her to back off into the far corner of the cell and lay down in the fetal position, facing away from her cellmate. At least this arrangement was entirely temporary. Those guards said something about moving both of them the next day, so all she had to do was grin and bear it until they were separated. And then continue grinning and bearing it. For years, while she was forced to build war machines, and would likely be whipped and beaten if she did a poor job of it. That was only if she was lucky. If not, then she would probably be whipped and beaten regardless of how well she did. Would they even release her once her sentence was up? Would that sentence even end? Or was death the only thing that would set her free?
How fast?
Fizzy looked over her shoulder at those words. The mimic had regained its composure and was asking her something with a determined face. Granted, it was the borrowed face of its once familiar, but it was a determined one nonetheless.
How fast what?
Answered Fizzy, despite herself.
How fast does MP go away?
What does it matter?
How fast? It repeated.
Why should I tell you?
Talk is free. Nothing to lose.
The monster had a point, but communicating with it any more than this was ill-advised. Yet she couldn't just sit there quietly. The mentor inside her still wanted to answer the student. More importantly than that, though, if she didn't speak up now, that stupid box would probably start shouting like a spoiled child all over again. If Fizzy was going to wallow in her own misery, then it would be better if she did so without having a horrible creature screaming at her.
I think it was 50 per second or something like that.
The room fell completely silent after that. The pale-faced head retreated back inside its shell, leaving the monster's appearance as that of a simple, suspended chest. It appeared to have no more desire to speak with her, and Fizzy was more than happy to oblige. Conversation was the last thing she was looking for right now. Okay, that wasn't entirely true. She desperately wanted someone to at least hear out her troubles, but she wasn't going to get a shred of sympathy from that thing. Monsters were wholly incapable of empathy, after all. Why did she have to share a cell with this horrible creature that had caused her so much pain? First, it... Huh? She sat up and looked at it curiously. Did it actually do anything to her? No. Boxy had clearly stated it was responsible for the death of her father and brother. That was more than enough reason to hate it, right? Wait. That wasn't right. During the interrogation, it mentioned being at the scene of their deaths, but it claimed it didn't kill them. It merely... ate them. Still, desecrating the dead like that was surely deserving of scorn, right? but it had also gone on a murdering spree and wiped out both the bandits that killed her family and the adventurers that failed to protect them, as well as that shady bastard who lured them away in the first place. Looking at things objectively, didn't Boxy avenge their deaths? Anyone and everyone who could be held responsible for her father and brother's untimely demise was sitting somewhere at the bottom of that monster's gullet. Or at least, that was what it claimed. But if that scary government spy was willing to believe its claims, then nobody would blame Fizzy for doing the same, right?
Ah!
She screamed and rolled around on the ground. What was she thinking? There was no way that monster had acted out of anything other than self-interest. It would have definitely killed her family if the bandits hadn't gotten to them first. Regardless of that, it also killed and ate people. It had a lot of crimes to answer for, to be sure. Especially for all those times it messed with her head. Come to think of it, why did it do that? To protect its identity? If it was just that, then shouldn't it have been easier to kill her? If Fizzy had simply talked to it rather than betrayed it, then wasn't there a chance they could be practicing their craft in her workshop right now instead of sitting in a jail cell awaiting some dismal fate? Maybe, just maybe, if she hadn't forced it to defend itself, then none of this would have happened. From what she was able to gather, it had even tried to carry her away from all that madness. The more the confused gnome thought about it while curled up on that hard, damp floor, the less Boxy seemed like a villain to her. For one thing, it had given her heaps of business. Fizzy's Fidgety Widgets was never a prosperous shop, and the unfortunate gnome was struggling to keep it afloat all on her own. The vast majority of her clients had canceled their orders once they found out her father and brother were no more, so she'd really been in a pinch about how to maintain her father's legacy.
Boxy, can I ask you something?
The mimic was currently trying to organize its fractured mind, so it didn't feel like engaging with the pink thing in the corner. All the information pertaining to magic and almost everything it knew about demons had vanished in a flash of light, along with its knowledge of cogwheels, gears, sprockets, springs, and explosives. Oh, wait. It wasn't all gone. Those one-on-one tutoring sessions with Fizzy were still in the back of its mind. The conversations with Carl and most of the memories it had concerning its familiars were still there. The information Zira had gathered for it before it got captured was mostly intact as well. Perhaps it could recover from this after all?
Why did you want to become an artificer?
Asked Fizzy. She had taken the monster's lack of response for silent confirmation it would speak with her, when in truth it wasn't paying attention to her at all. If it could magnificently ignore a couple of demons having violent sex for hours on end, then some nosy little gnome was no trouble at all. But still, perhaps there was some merit in speaking with her. It was possible she would yield some more useful information, and the mimic would need all the help it could get if it was to break out of this place. And if not, then it wouldn't have lost anything. In its own words, talking was free. Zira's bald face emerged from the chest's front. The gnome didn't even flinch at the bizarre action, though she was a tiny bit surprised she was already used to it.
"Machines are tasty," it said simply.
"What?"
"Machines are tasty."
"You eat artificer-made tools?"
"No."
"But you think they're tasty?"
"Yes."
"How can you claim they're tasty when you don't want to eat them?"
"Because they are."
"What's with that inane reasoning?"
"You don't think art fishes are tasty?"
No.
"Then why teach art fishing if you don't think it's tasty?"
The gnome decided it would be better for everyone involved if she just minded her own business after all. She lay down in the fetal position once again, but with one small change. This time she lay facing the mimic so she could quietly stare at it. Boxy didn't seem to mirror that sentiment and returned to its mental cataloging after making its head disappear. The cell remained silent for the rest of the day and evening, save for the footsteps of the odd guard patrol, Fizzy's own breathing, and the gentle hum of the electrified cage. The mentally exhausted gnome ended up focusing on that last one. It was a nostalgic sound, for she was the one who built the thing over 6 months ago at the behest of the local Lord Mayor. She never found out why he wanted an electrified cage, nor did she want to know. She just let that oddly comforting sound lull her to sleep. It was a minor thing, but it still reminded her of a better, happier time. Perhaps it was because of that noise that she dreamt about the time she had an argument with her brother over what constituted a clean work environment. How that guy managed to find anything inside that organized chaos of his was a complete mystery. He even had the audacity to get angry when Corny tidied up the mess of tools and parts that was his workstation. The argument got so intense that they nearly came to blows over it. But it was still a strangely happy dream.
"Look alive in there!"
One that was suddenly cut short when a guard shouted at her.
"Ah! What? Oh!"
She was now back in the real world, much to her disappointment. At least she didn't feel quite as depressed about it as yesterday. Somehow, watching the mimic quietly sit there made her strangely calm, as she realized that wailing and thrashing about wasn't going to help her in any way. Also, she really didn't want to lose to Boxy. If that stupid box could calmly await what Fizzy assumed would be a much crueler fate than her own, then the least she could do was not be a crybaby about her predicament. The guards escorted both her and the caged monster out of the dungeon and into the courtyard. Waiting for them there were a duo of griffins, barn-sized winged monsters that resembled the front half of an eagle. Their beak-tipped heads and long necks were covered in brilliantly white feathers that turned to a dark brown around their chest and forelegs. The front 2 feet ended in bird-like talons and were covered in brown plumage, much like their front shoulders. The rest of a griffin's torso and its hind legs were like that of a huge cat with a golden coat that seemed to glisten in the morning sun. It also had a long, slender tail tipped with a smattering of feathers, but was otherwise feline in appearance. If one were to describe these magnificent beasts in a single word, majestic was the most fitting. That was probably why they were pictured prominently on the Empire's flag, though the images upon the blue banners hanging around the courtyard didn't do them justice. The feeling they gave off when met in person was completely different from some caricature. It was like they had the aura of a ruler, their very presence demanding people grovel before them. Then again, that last bit was probably because of their sheer size. Standing with their heads held high put their eye level a good 7 to 8 meters off the ground. The massive feathered wings that were just above their front legs unfurled to a wingspan of nearly 15 meters. No wonder griffin eyries were built only at the highest points of a castle. They wouldn't be able to land anywhere else. Strapped to each of their wide backs like a pair of oversized backpacks were 2 specially designed cabins. The front one was made out of wood and had round glass windows. It was clearly intended to ferry passengers while shielding them from the frigid winds that usually accompanied high-altitude flight. The temperature inside was likely regulated through magical means to ensure maximum comfort. As for the other one, the only way to describe it would be like a giant steel box, a place to strap in the cargo and luggage of the passengers in the primary cabin.
"That's how we're being transported?"
asked Fizzy with an oddly enthusiastic tone.
"I've always wanted to ride a griffin."
"Easy there, girly,"
said one of the guards escorting the 2 prisoners.
"Don't get your hopes up. You and that thing over there are riding with the cargo."
And there went what little optimism the female gnome could muster. Now she really felt like crying. She and Boxy were brought before the gigantic beast that was currently lying down. A large wheeled ramp had been brought out to provide access to its back, which was a few meters off the ground. The guards dutifully escorted both prisoners up the wooden slope and unlocked the double doors at the back of the windowless metal container. They swung open to reveal a largely empty space. Beams of sunlight entered through a series of small holes along the sides near the top. It wasn't hard to imagine those would be the only sources of air and light once the door was shut tight. Boxy's cage was carried off to the far right corner of the container, as far away from the door as it could go. It was placed on a mat of processed bouncewood bark, one that was, in a fit of irony, made from the same raw materials the monster itself had delivered. The cage was then strapped securely to the floor using a number of ropes that were coated in some type of resin. They wrapped around the bars of the cage and were tied to specially designed hooks that poked out of the floor and walls of the container itself. Once the cage was properly secured, one of the guards restarted its electric field. The floor mat and special ropes served to insulate the device, lest it electrify the entire container and the beast it was carrying. As for Fizzy, she was also put in a cage that was attached to the floor, although this one was considerably smaller, likely intended for animals rather than people. It wasn't strictly necessary, though, as she had nowhere to escape to while flying thousands of meters up in the sky, which was also partially why this container would be left unsupervised during the 40-hour flight back to the Imperial capital of Oceanus. This was by no means negligence on the Spymaster's part, though, as he was confident Boxy's restraints would be sufficient. With its MP drained and unable to recover, the monster would be unable to fuel any of its active skills. It could still use the passive ones, like Shapeshift, but any attempts to break free or try something funny would be cut short by an electric jolt. In some ways, the gnome was far more likely to escape her shackles. An artificer was able to take apart pretty much anything, provided they had the right tools, of which Fizzy had none, rendering her about as useful as a half-rotten potato. In some ways, locking her up was unnecessary, but Edward made sure she was securely strapped in all the same, lest she do something profoundly stupid. At least he had the common courtesy to provide her with some basic necessities, a small cot filled with hay to lie down on, thick blankets to shield herself from the cold, a number of water skins and dried military rations for sustenance, and a small bucket for her leavings. This wasn't out of kindness or pity, but necessity. He couldn't put her to work if she ended up starving or freezing to death during the trip, after all. And if she was the kind of person who would give up on life and let herself die, then that would be that. Once the prisoners were securely strapped in place and Edward had personally inspected their restraints, he left the cargo container and locked its doors. About an hour later, Fizzy and Boxy heard the griffin's eagle-like cries. Their temporary dwelling then started shaking violently, and Fizzy felt an invisible force press down on her body as the griffin rapidly ascended into the air. This lasted for about 20 minutes until the creature climbed to cruising altitude, at which point the container leveled out. What followed was a surprisingly smooth flight, with just the wind howling outside and the odd pocket of turbulence to remind its passengers they were actually in motion. Fizzy spent her time staring idly at the box in the corner. There wasn't any particular reason for that, though. There was simply nothing else around to distract her from her depressing thoughts. Plus, the container would shake occasionally and cause the box to sway into the electrified cage and get zapped, to which it would react with a yelp and a growl. This was oddly entertaining to watch. The hours rolled by. Morning turned to noon, then to dusk, then to night. The beams of clear sunlight that poked through the holes near the ceiling and bathed the interior in a soft yellow light gradually disappeared. They were eventually replaced by moonlight, though it was so weak that it failed to light up anything at all. The gnome could not sleep, though. The sound the wind made as it rushed into those holes and the occasional shaking of their container made such things pointless. The luxury carriage on the other griffin was probably stabilized to the point where its occupants would feel like they were on solid ground the whole way through. And it would be heated by magic, whereas she only had a bunch of loose blankets that smelled funny. While she probably wouldn't freeze to death, it didn't mean she wasn't cold. The chilly rations and water she'd been given didn't help much either. As for the mimic, it did what simple-minded and less complicated creatures do. It sat perfectly still, waiting for the right moment to come. It had taken a lot of patience, a good amount of pain, and having to give up two of its jobs to get to this point. But that chance had finally come, and the opportunistic chest would seize it without fail. Because that was what Boxy T. Morningwood did best. Part 5. When a prisoner escaped custody under their own power, it could almost always be blamed on a single act of negligence. Edward Allen knew this better than most people, having been incarcerated in and escaped from prisons many times throughout his troubled youth and long career in subterfuge, which was why he made sure to keep a very watchful eye on the mimic that held the answers to the calamity in its box-addled mind. It was denied freedom at all times and was given absolutely nothing, not even food or water. Its pathetic attempt at restraining Zone served as a prime example of a situation that could have gone awry if it wasn't for that woman's superb strength. Containing monsters was a special case, however. On one hand, being slaves to their basic instincts meant they were not as unpredictable as they would appear. They all had certain behavioral patterns, and their abilities were confined to a specific theme or concept. Unfortunately, mimics were not usually considered a major threat, since they didn't appear outside of dungeons. So information regarding them was minimal. It was known they had limited shape-shifting capabilities and favored tactics that relied on stealth or ambushes, but that was about it. Yet, even if Edward wasn't completely certain what specific skills and abilities his prisoner had at its disposal, they would undoubtedly have a certain weakness. Their fuel source. Much like the rest of the world, any supernatural tricks and magical gimmicks on Boxy's part would require MP to activate. Meaning that once the mana-draining restraints were in place and had robbed the animate chest of its magical reserves, all that was left was to make sure its physical restraints were not lacking. Even on the odd chance it somehow escaped those bindings, it would be unable to lay a single splinter on the electrified cage it was in. In short, the experienced spy had done everything in his power after capturing Boxy to make sure it would not escape. However, the singular act of negligence, the one thing he had overlooked, that would provide the key to Boxy's escape had occurred just before the monster was taken into custody. In the gap between getting kicked through a building and being knocked out with that weird potion, the mimic had managed to withdraw a single MP recovery potion from its storage. It had originally intended to drink it, heal up, and run away with all due haste, but it couldn't do any of that before it had been caught. Which allowed that last crystal vial to remain in its maw, where it had been rolling around under its tongue this entire time. It had multiple urges to pop the thing and make a break for it, but Edward's constant hovering kept it from trying anything. Well, apart from the time it tried and failed to take that black-haired woman hostage. Thankfully, it had realized that wasn't going to work before it blew its only chance. With that moment gone, the mimic persevered and waited for a better opportunity. And now the time to act had finally come. It was in the dead of night, in transit through the air, and with nobody around to stop it. If that detestable human was able to catch it even under such circumstances, then its chances of running away with its life were truly zero. Boxy began its escape attempt by growing a short, thick tentacle from its faux wood frame. It pointed the appendage at the small box that was electrifying its prison, then crunched down on the mana potion in its mouth, setting its plan into motion. You have used a mana potion. MP plus 200. Acid started forming inside its appendage while the mimic accessed its storage and took out the other mana potion, its last healing potion, and those two shiny daggers it liked so much. Your magical power has been forcefully dispersed. MP minus 50. The metal restraints bolted onto its body started glowing with a faint red light just as the corrosive liquid gushed forth and splattered against the control box. The deluge did not last longer than a second and a half, however. That small spurt was all the monster could muster before what little MP it had regained ran dry. Fizzy, who was currently preoccupied with trying to tear into an ice-cold piece of dried meat, heard splashing sounds coming from the corner of the cargo container. She turned her attention in her cellmate's direction just in time to notice the fading glow of its restraints amidst the sea of blackness. She kept staring at that spot as if expecting something, though she failed to see anything else since the moonlight shining through the holes near the ceiling was much too weak. Or so she thought, until a certain control box let out a number of worrisome noises accompanied by a few errant sparks. With the humming noise gone, Boxy slowly stretched out a tentacle and tentatively touched the black bars of its cage, confirming they were no longer electrified. Although the acid did nothing to eat away the sturdy bars themselves, the mimic had accomplished its immediate goal of shorting out the device. The monster may not have been the sharpest knife in the drawer, but it still knew enough about artificer-made equipment to know it didn't take much to make it go haywire. That was all well and good, but that had been the easy part. The next part of the mimic's escape plan would not be so easy, nor anywhere near as painless. The monster let out a muffled scream of pain as two pure white blades pierced its lid from the inside out. It kept forcing them upward from the inside, working the handles via a pair of tongue tentacles to widen the wounds, shrieking all the while. Once those were big enough, it carefully gripped the pointy ends with a pair of external appendages, pulling them out of its mouth cavity. It then forced the wounds closed with its shape-shifting and waited patiently for the pain to subside and its HP to recover. As for Fizzy, she had no idea what was going on. Her gnomish eyes were unable to completely pierce the darkness, and the only thing she'd heard for the last while had been agonizing yelps of pain. And then, whether it was because the griffin changed course or because the clouds had shifted, the moonlight was allowed to shine right on the mimic's cage. It was then she saw it holding two glistening blades above its lid, only to thrust them down upon itself. The creature let out more groans and muffled screams as the twin daggers dug into its flesh. The monster then slowly but carefully carved away at the meat around one of its magic-draining restraints. After about half a minute of self-harm, Boxy finally managed to dislodge one of the bolts that was keeping the enchanted metal brace in place. It was then removed from its hole and discarded onto the ground with a metallic rattle. The monster panted heavily as thick yellow blood oozed out of its open wound. Even if the cuts weren't very deep and caused very little damage to its HP, they still hurt immensely. It was also the only way to get those bolts out of its body. Even if it was a shapeshifter, it didn't have complete control over its flesh. Its imitation wood frame could not be made to spit out the bolts, which was exactly what that man Edward was counting on. What he didn't anticipate, however, was that Boxy had both the means and willingness to essentially operate on itself.
One down. 15 to go.
After mentally psyching itself up a bit, the mimic moved on to the next one. And then the next. And then the next after that. One after the other, the metal bolts keeping its mouth firmly sealed came loose as Fizzy looked on in a mix of horror, shock, and disgust. Not knowing what to do, she once again tried running away from reality by burying herself underneath her blankets. That did little to stop the harsh sounds of metal cutting into flesh, however, nor did it deafen Boxy's pain-filled wails, which lasted for a solid hour. Your magical power is no longer being suppressed. Automatic MP recovery has returned to normal. Once free of its restraints, the mimic landed roughly on the floor of its cage. But it wasn't quite done. Next was its age-old enemy, the metal grating that surrounded it on all sides. Thankfully, its captors had revealed the weakness of this once formidable foe. So it took the opportunity to just sit quietly on the ground, reveling in the sensation of once more being able to open its maw. Its MP had largely recovered after several minutes, at which point it placed all of its belongings back into storage. It then stretched out a tentacle, slipped it through the bars in the cage, used metal mimicry to recreate the cage's key from its memory, and unlocked it. And then, with a vague sense of pride and accomplishment, the monster finally stepped out of its cage. It opened its mouth as wide as it would go, letting out a hearty, throaty laugh to celebrate its victory through sheer perseverance.
Ha!
It was official. Freedom was tasty. Hearing the oddly cheerful noises coming from her cellmate made the gnome peek out from under her covers. And what she saw was a spider-legged chest that had broken completely free from its restraints, rapidly yet silently approaching her own cage, She stared at it blankly and silently like a deer would a meteorite falling straight towards it, as if standing completely still would somehow make the incomprehensibly scary thing go away. This lasted until the monster opened its jaws to reveal two rows of jagged, mismatched metal teeth, which were promptly used to mangle the roof of her cage.
No! No!
She yelled.
Stay away! Please!
Foxy ignored her screams as it chewed its way through her cell. The wrought iron bars groaned and creaked and cracked as they resisted, but were ultimately no match for the monster's metal mimicry reinforced jaws. The rods of Fizzy's cage were mercilessly torn and ripped out as the monster made a huge hole in the gnome-sized jail. It then reached inside the cage with a trio of tongue tentacles, wrapping them around the gnome's feet, neck, and torso.
No! Don't hurt me! Please don't eat me!
And then, without paying any heed to her pleas for mercy, it unceremoniously put her in its mouth and closed its jaws around her. Now that Fizzy had been dealt with, Boxy moved to the next obstacle in its path, the metal double doors in the back of the container. Not that they proved to be much of a challenge. The mimic simply sprayed the area around the locks with acid for about a minute until they gave way. The doors then swung open and dangled erratically as the midnight sky stretched out before the creature. Boxy stood and stared at the view ahead with its frontal eye. The sky was clear, without a single cloud, providing an unobstructed view of the heavens and its countless shiny stars. The griffin's feather-tipped tail swung about slightly with the beast's every motion, and its golden-furred rump was visible directly underneath the exit. The large metal doors flapped wildly to the left and right, at least until the wind snapped them off their hinges. They fell backwards, dancing erratically in the air as they plummeted towards the ground far below. This exquisite scenery had a profound impact on the relatively simple creature. It reminded it that it was actually in midair, a detail that seems to have temporarily escaped Boxy's mind. What with all the self-mutilation and jailbreaking? Well, at least altitude wasn't much of a problem for a shapeshifter. All the mimic had to do was gather whatever loose biomass it had remaining and send it towards its rear. A few seconds later, two wide, bat-like wings, yet another body part mimicked from its favorite snack, grew out from its back. The creature took a bit of time to gather its courage and then made a running leap off the container and into the night, unfurling its borrowed demonic wings. It then proceeded to magnificently fall like a rock. Boxy had made a slight miscalculation. It was currently carrying some extra mass. A female gnome's worth, to be precise. As such, it took a little flailing about, but it managed to coax itself into a glide before things went awry. Full-blown flight was out of the question since the wingspan-to-weight ratio wasn't in its favor, so controlling and adjusting its descent was all it could do. This wasn't the monster's first free fall. It had tried and failed multiple times to copy Snack's flying skills. Who knew all those times it had flung itself off cliffs would pay off like this? The monster chanced a glance upwards and confirmed that the two griffins continued on their way at ludicrous speeds. Its escape appeared to have gone unnoticed, at least for the time being. Which was definitely a good thing. It felt proud of itself for waiting until nightfall to pull this off, as that no doubt made it more difficult for someone in the lead cabin to notice the mimic's descent. Granted, it didn't believe simple darkness would be enough to completely hide it from those people, but it was surely better than escaping in broad daylight. There was also the vague hope that some or all of them would be asleep. Whether that was indeed the case or not, one thing remained clear. Boxy T. Morningwood had succeeded in running away. If all went well, its breakout would go unnoticed until the group reached their destination. With some extra luck, they would think the mimic died on impact with the ground, though they'd probably organize a search for it anyway. However, they would have no idea exactly when and where this breakout occurred. There would be too much ground to cover, and the monster would not simply stand still and wait to be found. Not that Boxy could actually piece any of this together. If it was a few days ago, it might have had the mental capacity to come to such reassuring conclusions on its own. As of right now, however, it was far too preoccupied with not falling to its death to worry about the maybes and the what-ifs. After what felt like an eternity, The mimic's guided descent finally ended. It touched down somewhere in the Sawblade Mountains, in a sparsely forested area that had a steep slope to it. It latched onto a pine tree and withdrew its wings, scanning its surroundings from its high vantage point. Once it was convinced nobody was giving chase, it climbed down the old trunk. It was only when its arachnid limbs touched down on solid ground that it finally allowed itself to relax a little. A little being the operative phrase. Boxy had no idea where it was, what monsters lurked around, or, most important of all, where it could find food. It had to be more careful than ever, as it was in a relatively weakened state. It didn't have its familiars, its magic, or what little expertise at handling gadgets and grenades it had picked up. Losing those two jobs had been a huge setback, to say the least. At least it held the key to recovering one of them. It opened its maw and spat out something small, pink-haired, and unconscious. It would appear the drool-covered Fizzy had fainted from terror at the prospect of being eaten. After all, she was surrounded by teeth and a fleshy tongue wrapped firmly around her to keep her from resisting. Boxy had also very nearly swallowed her whole on reflex on a few occasions, but it managed to keep a firm grip on its appetite. All things considered, her passing out was probably for the best. As for the reasons it saved her, it had two. The obvious one was that it wanted its artificer job back. The second one was that it needed someone around to teach it things. Now that Snack was gone and Carl was unreachable, it had nobody around to guide it through civilized society. Granted, it didn't quite trust this gnome, but it was the best source of information it could dig up on short notice. If it wasn't for her valuable input concerning those mana-draining shackles, it might not have managed to escape like it did. Speaking of which, it would probably be best if it got rid of her bindings. It reached down with its trio of tongue tentacles and started fiddling with the locks on the shackles. It wasn't able to create a key like it did for its cage, but that wasn't really necessary. The monster's mind still held some memories from Fizzy's artificer lessons, and it could clearly grasp the tumblers through its magical perception. It didn't take long to pick the locks. Proficiency level increased. Lockpick is now level 1. Dexterity plus 3. Perception plus 1. The gnome's shackles slid off her hands and feet and fell to the ground with a small rattling noise, which caused her to stir. She groaned. She suddenly sat up screaming, her eyes as wide open as they could go. In front of her was a dark, creepy pinewood forest. Above her was the clear night sky. She was sitting on a steep and oddly muddy slope. To her left was a wooden chest. To her right, brought face to face with a man-eating monster with nothing between them, she had no choice but to scream and crawl away backwards. Every fiber of her being told her she was about to be eaten. Except for one, her logical mind and observant nature. The same things that arguably got her into this mess in the first place.
Ha! Ha! Ha!
She panted, taking in her surroundings.
You didn't eat me? We're outside, and my cuffs are... You freed me?
A woman's pale-skinned head appeared in front of her.
Yes.
It said simply.
Why? How? What? Art Fisher. Teach.
Right. It wanted something from her. What other reason could it possibly have for letting her live?
And will you eat me after I teach you? No. Why not? Not tasty. Also, good teacher. Smart. Liar and betrayer, but good teacher. Therefore, teach and will not eat.
Her life did not seem to be in immediate danger and would likely remain that way so long as she was useful to this animate box with teeth.
What about after I'm done teaching you all I can? You'll kill and eat me then, right? No. Why not? Need you. You... What? You? Need me? Yes. What for? For stuff. And things. And you're willing to trust me? After all I did to you?
No trust. You liar and betrayer. But machines don't lie. They're tasty. Not like you.
She stared dumbly at the pale head that bore a stupid, loopy smile. Machines don't lie. The wording was a bit different, but that phrase was originally the same one her father liked to say. Machines had no sin. That was what he used to say.
I must be out of my mind,
she mumbled as she hugged her knees. Maybe it was that accidental line. Maybe it was the thought that this thing had somehow avenged her brother and father. Or maybe it was the fact that, like it or not, this creature in front of her was the only one in the world she could turn to right now. Whatever the cause, she just couldn't help but chase away the insane thought that maybe, just maybe, partnering up with this thing might work out somehow.
All right, I'll teach you.
No matter how much she debated the matter, though, what choice did she really have? She would either be useful or get eaten. That was her world right now, and she would rather try to avoid the latter.
Good,
said Boxy with an even wider smile. A sharp, loud noise repeated itself slowly for a total of 3 times. It seemed to pour in from all sides at once.
Well done! Good show!
In the next instant, Fizzy and Boxy both found themselves seated next to each other at a large, square dining table instead of on the forest floor. The table had dozens of plates with all manner of things, although none of those seemed to be food. A tiny stone bridge, a human kidney, a small leather bag, a hammer, a guitar, a legless fox, and a small key-shaped lump of mud were a few of the random objects gathered. The scenery beyond the table was a huge white space that seemed to go on forever, completely different from the dark and dreary woods they were in just seconds ago. And sitting opposite them was a mustached, dandy-looking old man in a black suit and a top hat.
"Forgive the sudden intrusion,"
he said with a youthful voice that did not match his apparent age.
"But I simply had to congratulate you. That escape was a truly marvelous performance."
"What?"
blurted out Fizzy. She blinked in surprise, only to realize the man sitting at the table was now a purple goat with a tiny rowboat for a head.
"What?"
She blinked again, and the goat turned into a floating kettle. The next time, the entity became a lizard man with a mohawk and dark glasses on his snout. She blinked once more only to see a green-skinned woman in an evening gown and no face. She was speechless. The thing in front of her took a different shape every time her eyelids covered her sight for a tiny instant. She looked at Boxy as if asking for help, but the mimic in question had already retreated inside its not-actually-wooden shell and was currently chesting with all its might.
"I think I've finally gone nuts,"
Fizzy said uncertainly.
"Nah, you're probably fine," said the breakdancing gecko. "It's just that you mortals have difficulty perceiving me. Even the other gods have difficulty maintaining eye contact sometimes."
"Mortals? Other gods?"
"Oh, my apologies," exclaimed the inside-out sock. "I know you two as the illustrious Mr.—" "Is it Mr.?" "Let's go with Mr.—" "As the illustrious Mr. Boxy T. Morningwood and the lovely Miss Corny Fizzle Sprocket. But neither of you have any idea who I am. In that case, allow me to introduce myself."
The bare-bones skeleton stood up and took off its wings as if they were a book.
"My name is Bob, the God of Chaos."
The inside-out elephant then sat back down on its nails and let a fish float onto his foot.
"And I have called you two here to make an offer you will most likely not refuse."
Part 6.
"Wait, hold on a minute,"
screamed Fizzy.
"There's no such thing as a god of probability."
"Now that's just supercalifragilisticexpialidocious,"
screamed Joseph.
"What? What?
Oh, I'm sorry, apologized Mulder. I thought we were playing my favorite game. Scream random things that make no sense. Fair warning, though. I'm the reigning world champ.
I was doing no such thing.
Yes, you were. I assure you that the God of Chance is not only quite real, but that he's also sitting right in front of you.
Then prove it,
the gnome insisted.
Try and say my name 3 times in a row.
Tyrone, Jose, Amy. Now
she froze mid-sentence. The gnome was sure she was saying Delilah's name right, but it always came out differently. Even thinking back on it, she was certain she was referring to the same entity, despite that making no logical sense.
Not convinced,
she insisted.
The only thing you've proven is that you can mess with me, but that doesn't mean you're some rogue deity. I won't be fooled by some stupid illusions. I mean, I've never even heard mention of a god of uncertainty.
The same oddity seemed to apply to his title, too. Just now, she unintentionally called him the Goddess of Luck, not the God of Randomness, as he introduced himself just moments ago. Daniel smiled back at her from his brick.
Just because you haven't heard of me doesn't mean I don't exist. Just like syphilis, or the brain-sucking aliens from Ulknarob. I assure you, not only am I real, but I'm perfectly capable of wrecking your shit with barely even a thought if you don't watch your mouth. Like so!
Linda snapped her trees, causing the gnome's head and neck to disappear, leaving behind nothing but smooth skin between her shoulders. Her arms immediately went to grab her missing appendage, but failed miserably. It was as if it had never been there to begin with. Her headless body then started squirming and flailing around, completely unable to deal with the situation. Her head popped up from between her shoulders like it was a jack-in-the-box. She panted.
Are we clear, young Fizzle Sprocket?
Yes, crystal clear, Mr. Goddess of Chance, sir.
Much better. Now then, Boxy. Now that we're face to face. This is awkward. Talking to a chest like this is pretty weird.
The gnome nearly made a comment about how hypocritical that sounded coming from a basket with legs, but held it back.
Here, let's try this.
A finger snap was heard. The chest next to Fizzy flickered out of existence and a small naked child appeared in its place. It had brown skin, snow-white hair, red eyes, and looked about 6 or 7 years old. The face was oddly androgynous, making it hard to tell if the child was male or female. But it was undeniably cute. It was smiling a sweet, innocent smile and had a thoroughly vacant look in its eyes.
"How's that?" asked Carrie.
The child blinked a few times and stared at its fingers, then its lower body. Fizzy followed its gaze and ended up staring at its crotch almost involuntarily. She almost turned her face away in shame, but realized that would be a pointless gesture. After all, the child had nothing between its legs but smooth skin, which was to be expected of a genderless creature.
"Feels weird," said Boxy with a fittingly neutral voice.
"Well, it's only temporary, so please bear with it."
"Okay."
"Boxy?"
stammered the gnome.
"Is that you?"
"Yes,"
answered the child matter-of-factly. She turned around to stare at the God of Anarchy with accusatory eyes.
This is simply what the mimic would look like if it were human," explained Estelle. "This is merely an image I dredged up from its subconscious, so don't look at me like that, okay? I swear I'm not into naked little kids or anything, all right? I'm a firm believer in the glory of large chests."
Kishraldabaz the Inheritor stifled a giggle at her own bad pun. She then leaned forward, put her salamis on the table, and looked right at the mimic. Which was impressive, considering she had 3.5 heads and snowballs for eyes.
"Anyway, now that that's over with, I can finally have a proper chat with you."
"You know me?"
asked Boxy.
"Oh, yes. Better than you might think. This isn't the first time we've spoken, you know."
"It's not."
The mimic was sure it would remember meeting something bizarre like Russell.
Technically speaking, I was the only one doing the talking at the time, so calling it a conversation would be hard. I also said some hurtful things, but I hope you'll forgive me. I get just a little bit absolutely livid when some random box tries to steal my dungeon core for no good reason."
"Oh," So the mysterious and slightly annoying entity behind that dungeon core had finally revealed itself.
And sorry for trying to blow you up like that. It was uncalled.